pretty. So since you guys are here on time, I'm going to go ahead and get started. My name is Brianna Blazer. I run the Science Careers Outreach Program. So I'm going to tell you about that, a little bit about that, and then we'll get started. And Pam Hines will talk to you about how to publish in science. So just a few couple quick few things. I normally talk a little bit about AAAS, but since you guys are here at the AAAS meeting, I'm going to assume you know most of this, that we're an international nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing science, engineering, and innovation throughout the world. It is a membership organization. Hopefully a lot of you are members. And we're the publisher of Science. What you might not know is that we also have these resources at Science Careers. So sciencecareers.org is the website with job listings, career advice articles. There's something like 4,000 articles on there, so articles on just about every topic you can imagine. Information about graduate programs, meetings and events. GrantsNet has information about grants, and the Careers Forum, which is a really great resource. If you have any kind of career questions, you can go on there and type it. The people are pretty active and will give you some good advice related to academic and non-academic careers. We've got some of our career booklets up here about women in science and also our career basics. And the other thing I'm going to mention is that if you haven't been down to the Career Resource Room, it's in the West Tower on the purple level, I believe, way down in the basement in the Stetson Conference Center. There's tons of great resources down there. Rick Weibel, who works with AAAS doing career stuff, is down there, and you can go pick his brain about just about all kinds of career stuff. So if you haven't been down there already, it's worth a trip. And then I'm just going to briefly mention the outreach program, too, which is what I work on. We do career development workshops. It's one of the feel-good programs coming out of science for PhDs, students, postdocs, and beyond on things like career options, professional development skills, and the job search. And we do them in a variety of settings at trade shows and conferences and universities and colleges. So if you're looking for somebody to come do any of these sorts of events, wherever you may be, feel free to come talk to me afterwards. And then I'm also going to say a word. When you walked in, you probably got an evaluation form. I like to find out how my events are going and get feedback. So at the end, if you fill those out, we'll do a drawing. And I've got a couple prizes, among which is are some gift cards to iTunes or Amazon. So at the end, make sure to fill that out. Put your name at the bottom. And maybe you'll win a gift card for coming and listening to us today. So that's all I've got. I'm going to introduce Pam, and then we'll get on with that. So Pamela Hines is a senior editor at Science, the international weekly journal published by AAAS. She manages recruitment, selection, and review of research manuscripts and also develops special issues and review articles on various topics. In addition, she manages Science's Education Forum. She's an expert in the field of stem cell research and has expanded Science's leadership role in highlighting developmental neurobiology, developmental biology, and plant sciences. In the course of her work at Science, Dr. Hines has followed research around the world and across disciplinary boundaries. While obtaining her degrees, she conducted research on chromatin, gene control, and the mechanisms of DNA replication in eukaryotes during early development. Throughout that time, Dr. Hines taught various subjects, including vertebrate physiology, comparative anatomy, and developmental molecular biology. Her areas of interest include stem cells, cell and molecular biology, developmental neurobiology, education, plant science, and developmental biology. So without further ado.
Thank you, Brianna. Thank you. I'm very happy to be here today and happy to see so many people here interested in publishing in science. That's just great. Let's see. Now, how many of you have seen this sculpture? I mean, in the real life, not on paper. All right, good, because it's just down the road. It's gorgeous. It probably looks pretty neat with a little bit of snow sprinkled on it, which I have not seen yet. Good, I'm glad. Now, let's see what we have here. A little bit about, so I'm going to talk about science. I'm going to talk a little bit about AAAS, a little bit about some of the other programs. The question posed for this session, how to publish in science, unfortunately has a very simple and a very complicated answer. The simple answer is excellent work of spectacular importance and beautifully presented. Now, I know that's pretty tough to figure out. So then we're going to try to get into some of the details and figure out a little bit of what that might mean and how the whole system works. So here are the editors at Science. The group of people, including me there, are the ones who handle the research papers in the back half of the magazine and the commentary pieces in the middle of the magazine. Picture of prominence here is given to our editor-in-chief, Bruce Alberts. Now, I want you to look around the room and see if anybody can find him. No, I'm not kidding. Not kidding. Not kidding. We are honored today. We are honored today by the presence of our editor-in-chief, Bruce Alberts. Good. The editors all have PhDs in science. We all have experience in bench science. We have postdoc experience. We know it's tough. Doing science is extremely tough. Doing excellent, leading-edge science is just extremely, extremely tough. We are aware of that. And we, all of us, tend to have a great deal of sympathy for how hard that is. Nonetheless, we are charged with making some difficult decisions. Now, most of you probably are familiar with this version of science. How many? Anybody not? Let me rephrase. Anybody not familiar with Science Online? Good. No hands. Excellent. That's how most people see the magazine these days. You can get the current issue. You can get back issues. You can go all the way back to, and you get author index, and you get all kinds of other stuff that I'll show you. But I want to make sure that you also know a little bit about AAAS. Brianna mentioned that AAAS is the publisher of Science Magazine. AAAS, for authors interested in getting into Science Magazine, they often forget that AAAS is really a sort of a parent organization. But AAAS is a lot of what makes science different from its competitors. AAAS publishes science. Science has editorial independence, so decisions are made within Science Magazine, not by AAAS. But some of the important things are that AAAS is a nonprofit membership organization that leads scientific issues around the world. It does good things, and it's really pretty neat for Science Magazine to be within that house. AAAS was founded in 1848 in Philadelphia by 400 initial members. About 40 years later, Thomas Edison founded Science Magazine separately, and the drift of the story as I know it was that Thomas Edison was disgruntled at being known as an inventor, which in his mind was somehow not good enough. I don't get that, but it was not good enough. He wanted to be known as a scientist, so he made a journal and called it Science and put his work into it. Well, he's still a famous guy, whichever way he got to it. And 20 years after that, AAAS took over Science Magazine as their official journal. AAAS membership. Now, most of you read Science Magazine online. Most of you are probably getting it through a site license through your university. Would that generally be so? You can also get your personal subscription to Science Magazine on a personal membership basis. With that, you get a print copy of the magazine, which means you can take it with you and read it on the bus or whatever. It's a little easier. You are also, by so doing, you are also becoming a member of AAAS, and you're supporting a variety of really interesting AAAS programs. You also get access to Science Express, which is rapid publication of a few very important papers, and you get access to Science Classic, which are digital files of all the science magazines back to 1880, including this one that the guy is holding there. It's actually really neat to go look at that very first issue of Science Magazine. What I particularly enjoy about it is reading the ads that are on the front page, right up there, for things like, I don't know, does it try to sell a light bulb? I can't remember that. But it's just really neat to go look at it, which you can if you have membership access to the digital files. Now, this is reflecting the print version of Science Magazine. How many of you usually see the print version? Still pretty good number. That's great. Okay. I just wanted to show here some of the different departments in Science Magazine. The The thing looks gorgeous because of our art and layout department. The thing actually gets produced and turned into paper because of our production department. The copy editing people make sure that there are no errors. They are spectacularly good at what they do. And the business department makes sure that we all have a place to come to work. I am part of what's called the editorial department. The arrows there are meant to designate the different parts of the magazine that we editors fill content for. This includes the research reports, the research articles, the perspectives, some of the science signaling online project that I'll show you about a little bit later. The news department is a separate group of people. They fill the news pages that occur in the front of the magazine. They keep content flowing on the Science Now internet page, for example. So just a little bit about the news department. They are 24 staff writers. They have a lot of contributing and freelance writers who are helping to fill the pages as well. These people come from and work from all around the world. We have one news writer in particular who seems to live a year or two in various different places throughout Russia, Central and Eastern Asia. He must have a fascinating life. The stories come from what we all know as excellent research, whether it is published in Science Magazine or published somewhere else. Stories come from tips from you guys. And the news people think hard about what makes a science news story. And, of course, one of the most subtle things about it is what's the peg, as they call it. Why is it a news story? So you can come up with thousands of ideas for something that might be interesting to write about. But the news writers need to be very selective, just as do the research editors. Need to be very selective. And so they're thinking about why this particular story? What's important about that story? Does it have legs? Will it still be a story 3 weeks or 6 months from now, making it more interesting? Does it involve scientists? That's the kind of thing that they think about if you ever come up with the idea that you'd like to send to the news editors. Think about those issues. Now back to the editors, which is the group of people that I am with. And from now on, we'll be mostly talking about research papers, not news stories. As you think about publishing a paper, I just wanted to put up some discussion about what editors do and how editors think to help you get into our heads a little bit and think about a better way to put a paper together. This is what we do. We have to decide what research papers will be published in Science. To make that decision, we collect information from all the resources that we consider to be the most important. It usually includes peer review, it includes discussion, it includes our knowledge of the field. Once a paper gets through to a more favorable decision, we'll often be working very closely with the authors at improving the paper, working to improve the science, trying to decide which pieces belong in the paper and which pieces don't. And how do editors do that? We read a lot. We talk to people by email, on the phone, in person, at meetings. We stay updated with the literature. We read other journals. We read the 12,000 papers that come to Science every year. We visit people. We go to conferences. So there's just a lot of discussion that we try to be doing. Now, I gave you all, you all got a handout with some resources listed on it. I found a couple of articles that I thought just might help you, and this one was written for the Association of Psychological Science. This fellow was writing about tips for an editor. Now, and again, the purpose of looking at this article is to just think about when you send your paper, think about who you're trying to reach first, the editor. He frames his article more for an editor who's volunteering as an additional part of their academic job. That's why he says make the journal your top priority. Well, I'm full-time employed at the journal, so the journal is my top priority. But that line comes for people who are faculty at a university and have taken on a volunteer position to be editor of a journal. What he's saying there is pay attention, really, and I completely agree with that. Some of the other points on here that this fellow recommends to editors: don't routinely send papers out for re-review. Don't give in to special pleading. Now, you guys from the author side, you're going to want to push your paper. That's true. From the editor's side, as we think about, we have to allocate our resources, both time-wise and mental-wise, for the papers that are most likely to be great contributions. And as he says, keep focused on the paper. Don't just give in to who can chatter the most. Getting into papers into science again. Like I said, there's really no easy answer. But it does help to understand the process and think about strategies. And I will also show you some alternate places to publish. Remember that even a paper that gets rejected from science, it's not the end of that paper's lifetime. There are hundreds of other journals that it may be a very good contribution to. So we get research papers from all around the world. These data are from a couple of years ago. I think that if we had current data, we would see a rather large expansion in the China section, because we've seen a really interesting increase in the number of papers submitted from China in the recent years. What we have on the bright yellow there on the lower right is Europe. The big blob on the left is U.S. And then going up on the right, other Asia, UK, and the pale purple is China. I suspect that sector is getting bigger. The message here is papers are submitted from all around the world, and that's extremely important to us. We run an international journal. We'd like to see participation from everywhere. Research papers are published in all topics. And here it's not so important that you see any one sector. My message with this slide is simply that there is no topic that's excluded. Scientifically, no scientific topic that's excluded from our journal. All kinds of topics. If some new area of research is developing that we haven't thought about yet and it's not on this slide, that's fine. Send it in. If it's important research, we want to see it. And same message, this slide, it just shows only the biology papers. But again, I wanted to show you here. Back on this one. The big purple section here is chemistry. From here down to about here represent the physical science topics, which are listed down here. We do hold approximately a 60%, 40% balance between biological science and physical sciences. But other than that, we don't specify which topics at all. The biology papers, again, if some field is growing, we'd love to see more of it. If some field is starting to quiet down or getting more into sorting out technical details, then we may be reducing the number of papers that go into that sector. It's very important to us that you realize that the research papers are welcome from everybody. We do not have to invite the research papers. You do not have to have special agreements from the editors to submit a research paper. We would like to see your paper. On the other hand, some of the content that is usually invited specifically by the editors are listed on the right-hand side: the perspectives, the review articles, special issues, which are collections of review articles, the editorials, and the book reviews. These things are often invited specifically by the editors. That's not to say always, though, because we do publish independently submitted contributions in those categories as well. The news pages, on the other hand, are usually written by the staff or their freelancers. So, getting a paper into science, what helps? The presentation, as I've listed on the bottom, it's both secondary and it's important. No matter how important your work is, if the message does not come across clearly, if people can't see the work for how important it is, then you're just stuck. You've shot yourself in the foot. So presentation does matter, even though we're not making a publication decision on the basis of presentation. What we do make a decision on the basis of is the research. A solution to a long-standing problem, that's a good thing. Work that has broad implications and big impact, that's great. Things that overturn conventional wisdom or solve a long-standing debate. And something that rewrites the textbooks. These are the kinds of things that we would like to see in a research paper. What doesn't matter, and people often worry about these things, is whether the authors are important, whether they're famous. That does not matter to us. Whether the paper comes from one of the famous leading lights in the scientific researches, that does not matter to us. We would be thrilled to see an excellent, groundbreaking paper come from a small university that we've never heard of before. That would be just fine with us. Does not matter if you're in the United States or if you have a U.S. co-author. That does not matter. It does not matter if you're a member of AAAS, although I recommend you do be a member of AAAS because it's a good thing. Does not matter for deciding on the paper, however. And as I tried to show from those pie graph slides, the particular topic does not matter. Things that hurt. The LPU, the least publishable unit, this is probably one of the most common reasons for rejections of a paper. It's just not a big enough step forward from the previous literature or from the previous papers that you've done on the same topic. It may be that that size of a paper might be fine for one of the more specialized journals, and so you may be accustomed to dividing up your work in that sort of size of piece. But that's a strategy for more specialized journals. For a paper for science, you have to hold on to it a bit longer, develop the work a bit further, and take a bigger step. That's important to us. Repeat examples of a known phenomenon. If it's been shown in amphibians and you're showing it in fish, you know, maybe not that exciting to us. Unless there's something different about it that really changes the story. So a little bit about format. Science Magazine has a slightly unusual format. It does help us if you stick with this because this is how things are going to be published. You might as well get there from the start. For the research reports, it's good to figure a word limit of about 3,000, and that includes the text and the references and the figure legends. So you can figure that the word count for the text, which is what people often just stop with, the word count for the text might be more like 2,000. If you do a 3,000-word text and then you also have legends and references, you're probably more like at a 4,000-word paper, which is getting too big for us. When you bring a paper down to size, be very thoughtful about whether you actually do need to remove any of the science. Oftentimes you do not. Oftentimes it's just a matter of presenting the work with more concise wording. And rather than going off on to developing intellectual discussion about it, bring that discussion back down to one or two main points. You can still present every bit as much scientific advance and data and information, and you can do it in concise wording. The figures. We say three or four figures, and sometimes people figure that a full-page thing is one figure. They might figure that something like this is one figure that has six panels. That's not what we mean, because that would occupy, if you had three of these, that's three pages in the journal. That's too much. What we mean is like quarter-page size figures. In fact, what I tell people is if they put all of their figures together, all of their figures, they should be able to fit onto one page. That's a pretty good guideline for how much space you should devote to figures. In the text, the introduction can be pretty brief. Get to the point, frame the work, and move right on into what you're contributing new in that paper. Now, the supplemental online material, there's a lot of room there. You can put additional discussion. You can put backup data. You can put supportive controls. Keep the most important stuff in the four-print front manuscript. and use the supplemental online material to fill in the details and provide extra background information that will be mainly of interest to the specialist. Also, the technical materials and methods go into the supplemental section. So between the, people tend to think science papers are really short, but when you combine the three-page upfront for print material with the 50-megabyte supplemental section, you actually have quite a large paper. You have a lot of space to work with. Okay, take a look and read through some of these with me. Time flies like an arrow. Fruit flies like a banana. The man who fell into an upholstery machine is fully recovered. These are things, for example, that Microsoft Word, grammar, or spell check will not catch for you. But Mark Twain really puts it the best. The difference between the almost right word and the right word is a large matter. It's the difference between the lightning bug and the lightning. So by this, I mean to remind you to go through your text really carefully and with a fresh eye. You know, put your text away for a little while and then come back to it with a fresh eye and make sure that every single sentence says what you wanted to say, does not say something goofy or weird that you did not intend. Make sure that every single sentence in that paper has a purpose, not repetitive. Write for clarity. That will help tremendously. So some tips on writing your manuscript. You know, you all have probably had these kind of tips since you were in grade school, but here we go. We'll do it again. It's a lot about organizing up here. Keep the presentation organized in your head. A research paper does not have to be a chronological repetition of how you arrived at your final conclusion. By which I mean, first we did this experiment, it gave us a confusing result, so then we did this experiment to sort out the result, and then we had this new brilliant idea, and then we did this experiment, and we finally concluded that. That's a good kind of presentation in your lab journal, perhaps, but for a research paper, it's better if you come at it from a different end. If you come at it as if you were teaching, as if you were trying to teach the content, here's a new piece of information. Here are the data that convince us that this information is correct. Here are how the experiments were done to prove that that data is appropriately collected. It's a different way of thinking. So organize your thoughts for the paper, not for your lab journal. Write for multiple audiences. Science Magazine reaches a lot of people. Your technical expert specialist colleagues will be reading this paper. So they will need to see the words that tell them that you're on the right track, that you're using the stuff that they're familiar with, that you're launching off from, that you're well-grounded in their research. However, if you only write for the specialist, you're losing 998,000 people. A million people a week read Science Magazine, and you're writing for them also. You're writing for other scientists who are perfectly smart people, but they may not know your technical field. Still, you'd like to get your message across to them. You may also be writing for news reporters, also perfectly smart people, but who are not technically expert in your field. If you can convey your message to these non-experts, let's call them, interested readers but non-experts are an important audience for your paper in Science Magazine. That's a little bit different from how things work for most specialty journals. So when you write for Science Magazine, try to keep in mind these two audiences, your expert colleagues and the non-expert scientific readers. It helps to have someone else read your paper and think about the audiences and think about if they've succeeded in reaching them. It helps to have someone who's not an expert, someone who hasn't read your papers before, read those papers, and then come back to you. Have them come back to you and paraphrase the paper and see if they got it. That could be a kind of a good exercise. Again, the introductory paragraph, keep it short. The discussion, keep it short. In the conclusion, a few lines in the conclusion are where you should put things that are really speculative and maybe leap forward from the data, but make sure that they're framed and identified as speculative and not don't mix them up with the results. More specific tips on writing the abstract. We like to keep them to 125 words and less. Again, think about your two audiences. The abstract may be the only thing that many people read about your paper. So make sure that you reach to both audiences in those 125 words. It should include the background of the paper, why you're doing it, why it's important. It should include the results. If the methodology is an important part about what you've done, if there's something new about the methodology or complicated about it, then you should mention that. And the conclusions, of course, state what you've learned new with this paper that makes it such a big deal. Now, importance. We hope that all papers that are published in Science are important. We hope that. That's part of our decision-making process. It does not matter if you say, this work is important. That's an assertion that we just don't really need to hear, and you just wasted 5 words you could have used actually explaining data. So you don't need to tell us it's important. You don't need to tell us that it's novel. Rather, place it in context, show where the previous work was and where your work now is, and it should be clear how much progress has been made. The supplemental online material, as I said before, can go up to 50 megabytes. There, in here you can put videos, databases, the kinds of things that can't be printed can be put in here. This content will be reviewed by the referees, but it won't be edited at our journal, and so it's up to you to make sure that there are no mistakes in there. Even as the paper moves towards publication, it's up to you to make sure that there are no typos or peculiarities in that section. The cover letter, it helps. It does help. Of course, we read the paper, but it helps to hear your own short paraphrase about why you think the work is important and why you're submitting it now to Science Magazine. In the cover letter, people often write a little more, with a little more flow and casual expression, and that actually can be helpful to explain almost to, like, to your family about why the work is important. People occasionally like to ask us to exclude certain referees. It's okay. Don't go overboard. You know, when a person says exclude these 10 leaders in the field, we know there's a problem, and we're unlikely to comply with that request. However, if you want to say, here's this one or two persons, they are competing with me on this topic, and would you please not spill the beans to them? You know, we can do that. When you're writing the paper, think like, and I put out these three separate categories, and let's see if this works. There we go. We get a little blink. Think like your family, like I said, like your mom, like your dad, your grandmother. They really want to understand you, but they didn't do your research. They didn't go through grad school, perhaps. They don't have your technical background. So think about, how do you explain your work to your family? How do you convince them that what you're doing is important? Use that same approach when you're writing a paper. And again, a funding agency representative, like the grant officers at NIH or NSF. These people are motivated to understand you. They do have technical backgrounds, but they are not as immersed in the topic as you are, and so if you get too deep in the jargon, you may lose them fairly quickly, even though they're technically able to understand you. Keeping in mind the time pressures on these people, she has 5 minutes before her next appointment. She's got 100 people asking for money, or 1,000 people asking for money. They do want to support your research. It's up to you to explain it in a brief way that really gets the message across. Think like that when you're writing your paper. And then think like the editor. We may have 100 other papers on our desk that are competing for maybe 2 or 3 publication spots. You want yours to be one of them that gets in. You want us to understand that pretty quickly, because all those 100 other people are calling us too. So again, the key message is you get about three sentences in each of these areas before you lose your audience. Think very carefully about how you wish to present what's new and important about your paper. Another way to frame it is sort of the elevator talk. Maybe you've heard of this strategy too. You're on an elevator ride at a conference like this, and who's in the elevator with you is maybe the person at NIH who's giving you grant money. You've got from floor 3 to floor 21 to capture their attention, and then they're gone. What are you going to say about your work? Another way it helps to think about writing your papers is to think like the reviewer. Because if the paper gets there, it's the reviewers who are going to be judging and figuring it out. So think about what, step back from the paper, think about what you would say if you were a referee for that paper. So I wanted to spend a few slides talking about how referees think. And one of the first questions that we have to sort through with our referees is, if the interpretation is correct, is the paper interesting enough? That's a hugely important question. And it's extremely difficult to define what is interesting. But that's the question. It helps a little bit to think the second line, if you saw this paper published in Science, you know, that's even stepping back another step further. If you picked up that week's journal and you read through the papers in there, would you say, wow, that's really cool? Or would you say, what were those nuts thinking about? Try to apply that kind of lens to your paper. And if you can say cool, then send us the paper. Another way to think like a referee, again, I put up the two sectors here, the research and the presentation. The research is the more important thing. However, the presentation, if the presentation is bad, sloppy, chaotic, then it just makes it that much harder for everybody, including referees, to figure out what the research is. So it's pretty easy to work on your presentation. It's a lot easier to do that than it is to do good research. So make sure the presentation isn't just knocking your feet out from under you. The research, again, the results need to be significant. The approach should be original. The data should be strong, and all the appropriate controls should be there. These are things that referees will look at. Here's another article that I thought you might like to check out. It's on that handout page that you have. Learning the Ropes of Peer Reviewing. It's in actually the Science Careers website that Brianna talked about. And it has some real nice tips for how to be a referee. You can read this article also as an author, thinking again about what referees will be looking for when they look at your paper. Referees may offer you advice for improvement as an author. Referees may offer advice for improvement, and we do hope that they will be kind and gracious and that they will identify which types of further steps are necessary for this paper and which reach more into discussion about where this work could lead in the future. Those are both interesting points of discussion between the editors and the referees and the authors. And so if you ever are a referee, these are useful things to offer in your discussion. The common causes that a paper gets rejected. The top two are big. It's important that you are all working on research that you find interesting. That's extremely important. That does not always translate into that every piece of research is of broad interest to the whole community. That's what we're looking for. The paper is of broad interest. It does not mean that we think it's not valuable research. It may be extremely important to do. It may be filling in some important information that will serve as foundations for the next layer of research. However, Science Magazine is not the place to publish that kind of thing. We're looking for the broad interest, the large advance, things that go beyond the previous literature in a significant way. Other problems are that the conclusions maybe have gone a little bit too far beyond the data. The conclusions are not convincing. The data does not fully support the conclusions. that's just not going to work either in science or in a more specialized journal. Again, common reasons for acceptance. It's important. It's interesting or unexpected. And it's just great science. Very squishy stuff to define, but that's what we're looking for. Now, this article also is listed on your handout page, what editors want. And there are a couple of things on here that talk about presentation. It says, follow religiously the style guide used by the journal, no hybrid styles. Science does have this unusual style of the usually shorter front paper that's for print and the up to 50 megabytes supplemental section in the back. We view that as all one paper divided into two useful sections. It's a little unusual, but we think it really works well for us. Place the work in the context of articles previously published. This is important. It helps everybody get a good grasp, both the editors and the referees get a good grasp of how your work is grounded in the previous research, but how much of a step forward it makes. If you find that as you're placing your work in the previous context and you kind of don't think it's looking that big, that might be a message you want to hear for yourself and maybe send the paper to a different journal. But if you find that your work, as you ground it in the previous literature, is actually making a significant step forward, then that's what we need to see. Now, submitting a paper to Science, many people think that they should inquire to the editors privately and personally before. That's totally not necessary. It's okay, but it's not necessary. You do not need to make advanced deals. Submitting a manuscript is open to everybody who wishes to. That's extremely important to me. If the manuscript is rejected, should you appeal? We really would like to keep those appeals to those in which it's clear that the referees made an important mistake. Now, it may be that referees have made... often make smaller mistakes, like they misjudge the axis on one panel or something. And you may be able to point to mistakes that referees have made as they read your paper. It's not that we need to hear about every little mistake, but if there was some way of working through the paper which led the referees to make a really wrong, mistaken conclusion about what the paper has to say, that's what we would like to hear. And if the manuscript is viewed favorably, should you revise? Oh, absolutely, yes. Yes. As you'll see pretty soon, I'm going to get to some numbers. Not really that many papers are invited to revise. And if at that point you drop the ball, you've really dropped something that's quite valuable and important. So take every effort you can to respond. If you've been invited to, respond to the referee comments. Try to make the changes they've requested. Try to resist too much stonewalling, like, I won't do this, it's not important, they're wrong. That's going to get your paper rejected anyhow. So work with the referees through the editor and do revise the paper effectively. Now, when you submit a manuscript to Science, you'll see that there are a number of different categories. The research reports constitute the most of what we publish for research papers. They're in the completely back portion of the magazine. The research articles, there are one, two, or three each issue. They're much fewer in number, and as you might imagine, therefore, the judgment criteria by which a paper becomes a research article are proportionately more stringent. There are more reports per issue, fewer research articles. So even though the research articles give you a little bit more space, your chances of getting in that category are smaller. If you want to try to submit a paper as a research article, give some very careful thought to all the questions I've been getting at throughout the day today. How important is the work? Is it is it so important to get into science, and even more important to be one of the two or three papers that week that science essentially will highlight. It's quite a high standard. Brevia are these one-page items. There are really only certain kinds of results that are sort of emotionally suited to be a brevia. It's not meant to hold an incomplete research project. It's not meant to hold something that's one detail that your specialist colleagues might hold. But there are some types of advance that fit nicely in that size. What we like to see there are very broad interest things, things that are surprising, maybe even sometimes kind of fun, that fit well within one figure and a brief presentation. This is the page that you would see. So we take all manuscript submissions through the web these days. This is the page you see. It has links to give you instructions for authors, and it'll take you through the whole process in a pretty self-directed manner. Of all the manuscripts that are submitted, not that many are reviewed. Currently, about 25% of the papers get reviewed. And of those, only about a third actually get published. So in the end, you get down to about 6 to 8% publication success out of the number of submitted papers. And that's the yellow and light blue sectors. We publish a few more biology papers in yellow there than in physical science, the light blue. It's about a 60-40 split. This is what papers do when they get into our magazine. We currently get over 200, when they get into our website, rather. We get over 200 papers submitted each week. The first thing that we do is read the paper, of course, and we think about it. We think about whether it deserves to go on to in-depth review. And with that analysis, about 80% of the papers are sent right back to the authors as rejected. We try to do this quickly, within a couple of weeks. We do not have in-depth referee comments to share at that point. You can't do that fast, and if we got in-depth review for all of the 12,000 papers a year that are submitted, it would just, you all would just die, because you're the referees, too. You're not just authors, you're referees. So we try to focus in on the papers that have the most likely chance of success at publication. About 20% of the papers then go on to in-depth peer review. We get advice from referees. And again, about a third of those papers move forward into publication. And as they move forward, they may go through a couple rounds of revision. We get the editors give input, work on rewriting, work on structuring the paper, work on the intellectual flow, the scientific flow of the paper. And in the end, about 6 to 8% are getting published, and 92 to 94% of the papers are getting rejected. The Board of Reviewing Editors help us make the decisions at that early stage, where about 80% get rejected within 2 weeks, and 20% continue. Here's a list. I know you can't read the names, but what I meant to show you here is that we are asking advice in this quick interaction stage from quite a wide variety of people all around the world. You can see their names on the masthead at Science if you wish to look in detail as to who might be available in your topic range. We ask these people to give us feedback about if the paper is technically strong, is it interesting enough to be in Science? So we're not asking for technical, detailed review from these people. We're asking for how punchy is the paper? How important is it? And they help us tremendously. Now, you've seen some of the numbers about why it's hard to get into Science and how we cut out so many papers. So the question is, why would you bother? I think this is part of the question. Part of the answer. The total readership each week is about 1 million people. The vast majority of those are reading it online. These are the people who actually read Science. After those 1 million people, you get into things like news reporters who might have seen your paper and write an article about it and put that article in a general circulation newspaper. Then you've got another, 5 million people who've heard about your work. That's really cool. That's part of why it's worth the trouble to try at Science Magazine. The people who read your paper, these are AAAS members. We have these data only for those who have personal membership subscriptions. We don't have these data for all the online users. But most of the online people are at universities. So that, you know, universities or industries, places who've got a site license access to Science Magazine. But of our membership, what you see is that about half of them label themselves primarily as academic, and 18% is industry. And an interesting little tip that fell off the bottom there is that of the non-industry readers, so the other 82% of the people, about 42% of themselves claim to be involved with industry. So it has a really strong industry connection here, as well as a really strong academic connection. You're also reaching, of course, people in government. It looks like a small sector here, but think about it. These are the people in government, in Congress, who are deciding how much money to put towards scientific research. That sector may be small in numbers here, but it's extremely important that they see what's going on in science. And geographically, where are the readers? We have about 80% in the U.S., about 20% outside of the U.S., and once you're outside of the U.S., about half of those are in Europe. Then the next about 30% in Asia and smaller sectors there through Canada and Central America and Africa. We've seen tremendous growth in both readership and manuscripts submitted from Asia, which is really exciting. Some of the other perks of publication at Science. Science is committed to publishing the best research, and we put out a lot of publicity about your research once it gets to the pages. So once your paper gets published, it has access to this huge publicity machine that gets the word out. Now, I'm going to speed up because I want to make sure we get a few other things in here. Access, the original research is freely available 1 year after publication. If you have if your granting agency requires you to archive, you can do that at 6 months. And every author gets a referrer link for free that can send readers from his own website to his or her paper in Science. So you can get around paid subscription access in that way. Other places you can publish your paper within AAAS include Science Signaling and Translational Medicine. These are two online journals. Translational Medicine is new. You probably have not seen much about it yet. We're just starting to advertise it. But I think it'll be a very exciting project. Science Signaling was formerly called STKE, Signal Transduction Knowledge Environment, and I'm going to tell you a little more about that. Science Careers, Brianna told you a bit about that. So here's Science Signaling. Formerly STKE, as of September, it began publishing original research. It's just a clip from one of their pages. Some of the resources available at Science Signaling are those original research papers, reviews, perspectives, protocols about how to do certain lab research things. There's some very interesting discussion forums, and this cool resource, the Connections Map. Signal transduction is this subsector of biological science that can be extremely confusing but very exciting. And what this connections map does is it helps you visualize connections between kinases and phosphatases and receptors and ligands, who's affecting who. It's a dynamic interactive map. You can drill down on various things here and find out where they are and what other signal transduction pathways they might be connected to. You can contribute as an author by being a pathway authority. As well as submitting original research, you can be a pathway authority, someone who helps to manage the knowledge, the data, information about one of those signal transduction pathways. It's a very interesting resource. So that's Science Signaling. Now, Science Careers, I'm just going to go right by those because Brianna said some very nice things about that. And I want to say a few other things about some other AAAS programs that I think are very cool and I wanted to share with you. One is the AAAS Mass Media Fellowship. This is a program for where graduate students or postdocs can take about can take 10 weeks out of their summer. It doesn't have to derail their research career. Take 10 weeks out of their summer and go be placed in a media outlet like the Chicago Tribune. Go be the science writer for the Chicago Tribune for 10 weeks one summer. It's just a really neat experience, I think. And it gives these people a very different perspective on not only the media industry, but how scientific information intersects with the general media. I think some people who do this use it as a point to launch into a new career, which is great, and other people just take that experience back into the research academic track, and that also is good because it's a bridge that is often missing. We'll skip past that. The other program I really like are the AAAS Science and Technology Policy Fellowships. Again, this is a program taking scientists and putting them somewhere else, in this case, into the government policy world. You do have to be a U.S. citizen to participate in this particular program because the placements are in the U.S. government. But people in these programs, they tend to be early to mid-career, usually already have a PhD. I think perhaps you're required to have a PhD. Often already have a postdoc, maybe mid-career scientists, maybe looking for a sabbatical year or even a career change. And they get placed in various federal agencies or in congressional offices, and they just have a really great experience. These are the kinds of places that people can go. The diplomacy fellowships put people at the U.S. Department of State and the Agency for International Development. The congressional placements put people in senator or house or representatives' offices. There's a relatively new fellowship sector, global stewardship, for working on environmental or sustainability issues. It's a really exciting program. These are some of the past participants, and you can see where they've ended up as deans of their schools. Rush Holt, who was a former AAAS fellowship participant, is now or has been in the House of Representatives. And Kathy Kahn is at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, doing agricultural development work. It launches you off into really interesting careers. We're almost out of time, so I'll skip past this. Go check it out. It's a really neat AAAS program. And two prizes I want you to know about, because if you don't submit, you can't win. Just like if you don't put your name down on these cards that Brianna said, then you won't get into the drawing for the, what is it, an iPod?
An iTunes or an Amazon gift card.
There you go.
Remember to fill out your
Right, and take a look here at the Eppendorf Prize and the GE Prize, cash prizes rewarded for excellent research in PhD projects or young careers. And finally, thank you very much. Think about our next meeting. Thank you. Now, Brianna, did you want to say more?
No, but do you have any questions?
Oh, questions, yes.
If you're reporting on an interesting ecological phenomenon, for example, how important is it to know or demonstrate the mechanism, and how important is it to state predictions that you made, honest, accurate predictions in your book?
Well, it is true that certain portions of what I say come from my lens as a molecular developmental biologist, where we're often looking for the molecular mechanisms. Ecology, I'm honestly a little less familiar with. But I think that it will still be important that a study rise above simply describing. Once you describe whatever phenomenon you're looking at, then there should be something that says why we care about that description. What did we learn from this new description? How does it compare to other descriptions? What new conclusions can you draw about ecological principles? Would that help?
Well, I was looking more towards when you have two manuscripts and one has a mechanism and one doesn't, are you going to always go to the one with the mechanism?
It's not that simple, no. If there's just some amazing new description that just really astounds people, We will notice that.
And stating predictions that you made as part of your scientific process. Do you want that?
Yeah, but not too much. You know, the paper should be strongly grounded in its data, but it does help to hear where you think things can go from there. Yes?
I think launch started like some other system genus, like Nature,
Right. The question is, so we already have two of these journals. Science Signaling exists. Translational Medicine is on the way. Will we have others? I don't actually know. We should have our editor-in-chief answer that question, perhaps. But I think that's a plan under development.
I think it will be 5 years from now. It's not needed.
Yes.
I want to ask a general question about publications on novel approaches in education.
Yes?
I'm asking this as a mathematician whose research recently is in the field of mathematical biology. And there is a lot of interaction there at the graduate postdoctoral level and, of course, research level. This is strictly kind of coming down to undergraduate education. And there are a lot of experimental work that's been sponsored by the National Science Foundation, which is showing good results, but evaluating this result is a bit more difficult and takes a long time. So if we go with the traditional ways of evaluation, by the time this is all done, probably the novelty of the results is no longer there. So I was just wondering whether you could comment on this kind of new directions in education that are influenced by research, and whether someone is interested in publishing articles.
Right. The question is about publishing education research. And the answer is yes, we are, actually. And this is a relatively new move for us, but we are, particularly me, send them to me. we are interested in research papers on education in any topic domain, any age bracket, K through 12, college, university, public, general in education, how people learn. It is, so you're asking, can a paper just describe a phenomenon or does it have to analyze whether?
I'm asking that there are two approaches to this. One is the more scientific approach and the other one is the more traditional education type of research which people in graduate programs in education do. And my sense is that these two are related, of course, but they're not identical.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't have a cookie-cutter answer for that. We are looking for excellence. The scientifically grounded ones are likely to be more favorably viewed at Science Magazine. However, you know, as in the domain of ecology, if there's some new thing that describes a phenomenon that really surprises everybody, you know, we'd like to hear about that too.
So you're generally open to considering articles on education?
Yes, and it just is not really feasible to exclude one sector or another in this simple way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Could you make the slides that you presented available to you? If you want to put them on the website, I can put them on the outreach section.
I'll discuss it with Brianna, okay? Okay, some of the articles that I cited and some of the websites that I pointed out were on this handout. If anybody did not get one, I'll leave them on this table here for you to pick up as you... Okay. Yes. Oh, okay. For the website. Yeah, okay. Yes.
So,
I think you're asking, are you not, whether if we reject the paper within a couple of weeks as one of those 80% unlikely to go forward, if you can appeal that decision. Of course, you can always try, but it's really unlikely to succeed. We have we may not be experts in your particular topic, but it is our job professionally to be knowledgeable about the field. And we have discussed your paper, and we have most likely consulted with some of those experts who are on the board of reviewing editors. We did not reject your paper just, you know, like that. And it's generally a matter of whether the message is interesting enough. We've still reserved 3 times more papers than we can publish to move forward. So to dispute the decision at that early stage is, you really have to get past a lot of more hurdles. I don't recommend it. Pardon me? Well, again, if there's some further discussion at that point, it's really best if it remains focused on whether or not the referees made an important error, not just a trivial error, but an important error that changed how they would think about the paper. Yes, in the back?
If you're fortunate enough to have a paper that meets the mandates that you said, one of the first questions that often comes to mind is science or nature.
Uh-huh.
So from your perspective, is there sort of criteria or something that you can share with us that makes science a more appropriate venue for a particular paper, or is it, like, how would you suggest those decisions?
Well, Nature is our competitor. they don't let me in their offices. I don't really know what goes on in their heads. So I can't make the kind of clear comparisons that you would like. But let me just point out a few things. There's a real difference in the business structure. Nature is part of a commercial publishing house. They publish journals for money. That's what they do. Science is part of this nonprofit membership organization that does all these other great things. I think that's important, actually. And another factor to remember are the readership numbers. And the last numbers I saw, Science had a readership numbers that were like 5 times more than Nature's.
But I've said all these things, as generally know, but is there anything in terms of the, what is a more suitable publication for a particular paper, if it's a particular discipline or policy relevance or something like that.
You're sort of asking me there to analyze how Nature makes their publication decisions, and I'm afraid I just don't feel like I can do that. Yes, in the back.
All technical papers that you design go through a very thorough peer review system. But you also mentioned that you have a large staff of news writers. And from what I can observe in the past decade, the number of news items has been increasing, for example, the three questions section. On the other hand, it looks like the quality of those varies strongly. Sometimes it looks like information just picked up from threads, from media somewhere without any sort of review. What is the process in science to ensure that the quality of this news information corresponds to high quality of technical information? Because people who read science expect from every item published there to be a piece of reliable.
Yes, so this question is about the news pages in the front portion of the magazine, right?
Yes, and like the circulation section, other things which are not technical submitted papers which have gone through.
Right. All the research papers in the back portion of the magazine have been peer reviewed. In the commentary section in the middle, the perspectives and the forums, some but not all of those have been peer-reviewed. When it reaches more into the domain of opinion, it's kind of not so functional to get peer review about an opinion piece. But we hope that, you know, we do, that the editors who run those sections read them thoughtfully, they discuss, they may ask informal opinions of other people about whether something's just wacko or whether it really is an important statement. Now, for the news pages in the front, that group of people work separately from what I do. But as I understand it, no, they're not peer reviewed. That's not how news writers work. But they do work through a process of their own expertise and layers of editors above them who bring their own expertise as well. they reach out to the community in discussion and conversation to make sure that their technical information is correct. And as news writers, as reporters, their reputation stands on whether or not what they've written is strong and good. And that's very important to them. And so they go through, they take a lot of effort to make sure that what they've written is good. But there is not an official peer review process for the news stories. Yes. So the question. The question is about pre-submission review and how much information you can get in essentially a casual conversation before you actually submit the paper. Actually, again, this number 12,000 papers a year and over 200 papers a week that we spend a lot of effort analyzing, thinking about, and getting external opinion on. Most of our attention is focused on the papers who have taken the effort to formally submit the paper. That really is true. We owe our allegiance to the people who have submitted real papers. If you want to have a little bit of discussion beforehand about whether something might be worth your further effort, we can give you a little bit of feedback, but we can't devote a lot of resources to analyzing a paper before you've even decided to submit it to us. So, for example, some of the things that might happen are some authors will send that inquiry out to five different journals at the same time. And based on what kind of responses they get, then decide where to send it. But that means that five different journals are repeating the same work at the same time. It's really not the best way for us to use our resources. We would rather focus on the papers that are officially submitted.
What's the relationship with PLOS One, for example, and PLOS Family of Journals in general? Because PLOS One seems to have the same mandate as you, and they also have very broad outreach to the public, to the media. So are you going to eventually sort of, you know, combine forces with them, or what's your relationship?
The question is, what's our relationship with the PLOS journals? And I have to say, none in particular. They're a different organization than us. We don't have any particular connection with them.
So what are the differences between nature and science?
Between what?
Nature and science.
Impact factors are very similar. Don't get too worried about the impact factors between nature and science and the other journals, because they are extremely susceptible to statistical aberrations and to changes in the details of what numbers go in and what numbers get excluded. They're very similar.
So now people are looking for F-index.
Now, actually, I'm sorry. Let me just say, since we are past time now.
We have until noon.
Oh, we have until noon?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wanted to make sure anybody who needed to go to another session could do so.
I'm going to walk through and start collecting the evaluation form if you've done filling it out.
Okay. Yes.
Do the reviewers have to publish in science?
No. The question is, do reviewers have to have published in science? No. We search our reviewers from all around the world based on their expert knowledge of the topic. If for some reason they've sent all their publications elsewhere, that's not one of the criteria that we look at in choosing a referee. We look for their expert knowledge. We keep track of the referee names and information, yes.
Could you spend some words about the science of State Express and the publication?
Yes, the question is about Science Express. So Science Express is online only. We put up 2, 3, or 4 papers in electronic version in their accepted version, but that's before copy editing and production have really done a lot of gorgeous work on them. This is a way, and then those same papers, after copy editing and production, will end up in the printed journal and the regular website version. So in Science Express, a paper may be essentially released for publication and discussion several weeks to a month or two before it gets finally printed in the journal. We try to choose the important papers for that treatment. Yes?
Well, my own field is computer science.
Uh-huh.
Well, but when I look at the journal, the science journal, I see more papers on biology and perhaps physics than any other fields of science. So would you comment?
Right. We do hold an approximate principle of about 60% of our pages to the biosciences and about 40% of our pages to the physical sciences. Computer science would fall in the physical sciences category. Now, it's true we don't have a lot of papers in that topic, and I think that the editors who look over that topic would love to have more. So if you have some strong research in that area that's worth considering, I encourage you to send it in. I'm sorry, what?
Soil science? Yes.
That's fine. We're not categorically excluding any domain of scientific research just because we didn't think to name it. Well, so this question is really about distributing topics. And you may see also that we've published some papers in anthropology. Not a lot of money in anthropology that I know about. Not a lot of people do it. But it is an important domain of scientific research. And also, by the way, many people find it very interesting. And so we publish it. On the other hand, medical science, ton of money in medical science. Everybody's interested in it, their own healthcare issues or whatever. If we were to select papers just on the basis of how many research dollars support that area, we would become the New England Journal of Medicine or something. But we're not. We're the Journal of Science. And so anthropology has a place. Education research has a place. Ecology has a place. Regardless of the research dollars that ground that field or the headlines that can come out of it. Yes, in the back. The cover? How is the cover decided? Well, we have a lovely art director at Yale Katz who looks at gorgeous photos and decides which one is the most gorgeous. Yes. Yes, and I would encourage you. Why not? You know, if you have a really pretty picture of what you're doing, it doesn't hurt to try.
Why do you have only one Brevia per issue?
That just was a strategic choice. But there could still be short report articles. Do you like the short format? Do you want more Brevia?
Sure.
Yeah?
Pack more into the same number of pages.
More Brevia means fewer reports.
More Brevia means more publications in science per issue.
It does.
More people can get in.
It does. You might recall a couple of years ago, a year and a half ago, we ran a short experiment about one-page summaries. In which in November and December of, was it 2007, I think, all the research articles, the big papers, got a specially constructed one-page summary written by the author. So in a way, a brevia, a one-page thing that was written and edited very heavily with a particular view to be broadly accessible. And we ran this experiment interested in your feedback, readership feedback, on whether that kind of presentation made the research more accessible to you, whether you thought it was worthwhile. You know, and I think we'd still be interested in hearing your thoughts on that. If a journal became, for example, maybe became more one-pagers, like more Brevia, more one-pagers, and fewer of those big papers, what do you think? Would you like that? More science citations is what it would do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's we continue to think about how to improve Science Magazine and help it grow with the times. And these are interesting new roads to think about.
Time for
maybe one more question?
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask the other lady's question in a more general format. I noticed there's a trickle of education articles, research articles coming into science. So
yeah.
Can you talk about the general, what you're looking for?
We are now looking for more. Okay? You've got some? And we're very interested in research-grounded education papers. And they will have a place in the back pages with the research reports, with the research articles. They need to be excellent. They need to be groundbreaking. Everything I said about all the other research papers, they need to be that. Oh, yeah, that's okay. Right. Right. Oh, yeah. So much of science is, you know, you become an expert in a topic and you develop your research project. And so by necessity, you might refer to previous things you've done. That's fine. It also needs to be appropriately grounded in the broader field. But it is unlikely that an entirely self-referential article would be of high quality.
Sorry, a very short point about some data you presented at the very beginning about Europe. Europe is a small country, but if you take apart Scandinavia and the UK, it would be even smaller.
So yes.
In the origin of the minted manuscript, there were Europe, Scandinavia, and UK.
You know, I think I developed that slide. It happened to be a time that I was going to give a talk similar to this in Stockholm. And so I pulled out Scandinavia in particular. They are part of Europe? Yeah, sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. So please check them out on your way out, and I'm going to ask for your help in drawing two quickly. I've got a water bottle and a gift card.
Okay.
You've got to stay put for just a second.
Okay. That one. Mix them up. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
One.
Okay. Oh, that doesn't have a name on it.
Oh. Oh, you can't win if you don't put your name on it.
Okay. Is Dennis Trumbull still here? Okay.
And two.
And the second one is Ciro Gardi. Okay. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.